I'm on a train, luckily not in the quiet carriage, and I'm heading to one of the most beautiful places in Europe.
Dames en heren, onze volgende halte is station van Brugge.
We're lucky that the medieval city of Bruges is practically on our doorstep in Britain. It was first recorded in 840 and it's steeped in history. As soon as you leave the railway station and take the stroll that takes around 10 minutes into the centre of town, you'll understand why UNESCO has described the medieval city centre as outstanding. Bruges is a compact city, but its cobbled streets and charming buildings seem to go on forever. The centre's not been blighted by tower blocks or concrete constructions. Its lanes are flanked by houses built with tiny old red bricks, many with the Dutch-style gables that rise to a central point in symmetrical steps. They're reflected in the waters of the leaf-shaded canals, occasionally rippled by the wake of narrowboat tours and swans vying for space under the many bridges.
You should go and walk along the canals, and do it preferably early in the morning or late in the evening when you have the city all to yourself, because then you will see the swans paddling through the canals at ease when no one else is chasing them.
I pause to take in the view standing on a special bridge as boat passengers passed underneath, waving at me and smiling to their selfie sticks.
You have a little bridge, and they also call it Love Bridge, over the canal. I like to be there just to look around. You can smell the history, you can see how it was in the Middle Ages.
A few moments' walk away, you'll find the Lake of Love. It's where the old port was, before Zeebrugge, 20 kilometres away, was developed. People sit and watch the swans around this shaded waterside green.
Again, it's romantic. You can sit there and maybe you can ask your girlfriend to marry. That is next to the Beguinage. It's a monastery.
That monastery was established in the 13th century to cope with single women whose husbands had been lost in the Crusades. Its white buildings stand around a shaded lawn. The city walls are gone, but four of the medieval gates remain, and you can walk around the former defensive ring, the ramparts.
It were canals that were dug that people had to cross. They form a circle of 7 to 8 kilometres, so the whole ramparts around the city is a park.
You'll also find some windmills along that circular route.
Windmills that have been torn down elsewhere in Flanders and have been rebuilt here at places where we used to have windmills.
The Belfry dominates Bruges' large market square. It looks like a honey-coloured church tower that's been extended upwards in sections, like opening a telescope. At 83 metres tall, it towers over the adjacent 13th century town hall next to it. There's belfry towers in many Belgian towns.
It was the symbol of the independence of a city. So if the Duke would go to war, he would need soldiers in his army. And when they returned, and if they had won, they would obviously negotiate extra rights. And they were clever enough to put it in writing. And obviously you wanted to keep those charters in a safe place. So that is why belfry towers were built.
Tour guide Elsie Verlind of HelloBruges.com, tell me why the tower is so big.
To impress foreign merchants coming to Bruges and show them this is the heart of the world. This is where everything happens. This is where you will do trade with every other nation in the then known world. So it was all about showing the wealth of the city, showing off to others. So the higher your belfry tower was, the more power you had and the richer your city was.
And you can climb the belfry tower if you're fit enough.
It's about 366 steps. The view that you will have up there, it's amazing. Maybe you've seen the film In Bruges. That also explains why it's a pretty popular destination. And on the other hand, the Belfry Tower nowadays, it has a carillon inside. It has been in there for about 300 years. And the clocks, the bells that are in the carillon, and they play songs every quarter of an hour.
There are so many of these carillon bells and towers around Belgium and the Netherlands, there's a professional association for people who play them. Bruges' carillon master, Frank Deleu.
The carillon is 47 bells. The bass bell is 5 tons. And the total weight of the carillon is 27 tons.
So how does Frank choose the music played by the belfry that's heard across town?
At the hour we have two melodies, two songs that commemorate the end of the First World War. You can program all music on this thing. It's 18th century, the drum, so it has not all possibilities that we should want. And then it must be music that we can sustained for 2 years, every hour day.
At certain times of the year, Frank plays concerts. When David Bowie died, Frank marked the passing of this rock legend by playing his greatest hits from the belfry.
First of all, Space Oddity, then Rebel Rebel, Heroes, Changes and Life on Mars.
So why is Bruges so beautiful and unspoiled? It's basically because the city didn't build factories.
Well, I think in England you have an expression that says every cloud has a silver lining. That has been the case for Bruges, actually. Industrial Revolution. That is what has changed the layout of most of the cities in Western Europe, in fact. Because when factories came to the cities, they wanted to build them where the people who could work in it lived. And no one really believed in the concept of the Industrial Revolution.
One of Bruges' most famous industries is lace making, and I headed to the Lace Centre. It's part museum, part exhibition, part shop and part learning centre. Rudy Donolf told me that lacework became popular because the city hadn't industrialised.
Because men were working as season workers, you know, abroad. For those women, the only way to survive was by making lace as a kind of home industry.
The Lace Centre operates from a former lace school. It looks like a Victorian school building with long corridors and big sash windows. It was once operated by nuns, the Sisters of the Immaculate Conception.
It started 1899.
So it operated continuously?
Well, that were the sisters. The sisters stopped. They're getting older and older, and at a certain moment, technically and financially, it was not any more possible.
Upstairs, the classroom was a hive of activity, full of women of all ages, laughing and joking as they worked the lace. The oldest participant was by far the fastest.
She's been doing this for more than 80 years. She started as a child. She had to do it to make some money for the family.
We left the classroom and walked downstairs into the museum. We entered a darkened room and display area with low lighting and illuminated exhibits on display cabinets. And in the centre of the space, a small cinema playing videos about the history of lace making. It had the air of a well-funded city technology museum. It wasn't what I'd expected. I was really impressed with the interactive display too. You can try your hand at lace making using a touch screen.
Before we got the big cushion, we needed an hour to make it ready for the next day. And now with the touch screen, so they can learn the three different stitches.
Today's technology sat alongside traditional skills and craft work.
This is 400 years old. This is, for instance, a 1700 colour. That's a little bit what you find in England on the Van Dyck paintings, showing your wealth, in fact.
The bigger it was, the wealthier you were, just like their belfry towers.
Bruges is nice in every season.
I couldn't have asked for a better Bruges base than the centrally located Hotel de Castilian. The 20-room boutique hotel is contained in a beautiful 15th-century listed building on a peaceful side street. Even so, it is at the heart of the city.
It's between the St. Saviour's Cathedral and the Church of Our Ladies, next to the canals and next to the shopping street, and about 5 minutes from the market square.
Mark Christians is owner of this business. The hotel was once home to the Bishop of Bruges in the 18th century.
And his name was Jean-Baptiste Louis de Castillon. So the name of the hotel is de Castillon, has his name. It was the Bishop's Palace.
Later, the building was owned by a rich elderly woman who displayed her wealth with decadent decor. Today, you can still view the beautiful woodwork, and you can't escape the way the lounge glows with the gold leaf on the walls and ceiling.
In 1920, it was still reasonable to buy that, to do that, but it was the rich families who did that. And in Bruges, the salon was known as the house with the golden salon. Last year we renovated it and we put 20,000 leaves of gold.
So it's all real gold decorating your walls.
All real gold, yes.
The cosy hotel bar features a glistening central chandelier, large wall mirror and ruby red walls and velvet curtains. It is beautiful in the evenings as the lights are dimmed and the spirit bottles in the shelves are illuminated from behind.
My wife and me and my children, we are a little bit romantic people and we want to have something contemporary of that time, but also with some atmosphere which makes you happy.
Well, beautiful Bruges may provide an historic backdrop, but the city isn't a museum. It's a living town with a creative craft sector. We'll learn about an unusual art form in which the city excels, celebrate Belgian beer and the city's chips next.
I never came to the beach or stood by the ocean. I never sat by the shore under the sun with my feet in the sand, but you brought me here, and I'm happy that you did, 'cause now I'm as free as birds catching the wind. I always thought I would sing, so I never swam. I never went boating, don't get how they are floating. And sometimes I get so scared of what I can't understand. But here I am, next to you. The sky is more blue in Malibu. Go down as we're walking. I'd spend the rest of my life just standing here talking. You explain the current as I just smile, hoping that you'll stay the same and nothing will change and it'll be us just for a while. And I make a wish to swim away with the fish. Is it supposed to be this high all summer long? I never would have believed you if 3 years ago you told me I'd be here writing this song. But here I am, next to you. Sky so blue in Malibu, next to you in Malibu, next to you. Ah,
I'm in the historic medieval city of Bruges, 20 minutes drive from the Belgian North Sea coast port of Zeebrugge. In the Middle Ages, Bruges was a bustling port itself, made wealthy by the wool trade. The Dukes of Burgundy spent winter in Dijon and made Bruges their summer course. Like most royalty, they had a taste for the finer things, and their presence encouraged jewellers and the diamond trade. Bruges was Belgium's first diamond centre.
It's 200 years earlier than Antwerp.
I met with the owner of Bruges' Diamond Museum. John Rossenhoe's background is in geological engineering, so he knows a bit about rocks and stones.
The first places in Europe where diamonds were polished and sold was in Bruges, 1360, where rough diamonds were sold on the market in Bruges. And then the diamond polishing invented by a local goldsmith about 1470. A diamond is the hardest material of our planet, and you can only polish diamond with diamond. So what did Ludwig van Bergen invent? He invented the technique of polishing the diamond with diamond dust.
Now, the diamonds which were traded back then wouldn't have had the distinctive appearance of the stones you'd buy today.
It looked much more irregular.
So, what can you do at the Diamond Museum?
Look at the diamonds more close up. They even can stretch them. They can test the diamond. As you can see here, we have a diamond tester. They can look at it in the microscope. This is not a nice sound, but this is how it sounds when a diamond is scratched against a glass. You can also can try to evaluate the colors and the sizes of diamonds here.
You can also watch a diamond cutting show in a lecture theater where an expert shows her skills. Overhead cameras project close-up shots of her precision work and polishing up on the video monitors.
What do you think how long it takes to sew one diamond of 2 carats? They are quite hard.
The audience were given the polished stone to pass around and inspect, but I did notice that the host insisted it was returned before we all left the room.
Thank you, well.
On your way out, you can buy one of the world's smallest diamonds for 10 euro.
We have a diamond which is less than 1/100th of a carat. 1 carat is 0.2 gram.
Can you see your smallest diamond then with the naked eye?
No, you need a loop to see it.
Diamond polishing is just one of the city's craft skills. The Handmade in Bruges initiative aims to showcase the wealth of artisans working in the city.
60 makers who have the label Handmade in Bruges. You can be sure they make it themselves.
The Handmade in Bruges initiative is making it easier for visitors to find these craft shops.
Most of the designers or craftsmen are a bit hidden away.
They list their members on an app and on a paper handout.
You can get a map for free, and so you have a good overview where all those different designers or makers are in Bruges.
I met with Greet Roesbeck at the Makers Republic. It's a pop-up shop and cafe operated by craft workers. There's a number of people who create stylish art using calligraphy or writing techniques.
A little center which is known in the world for calligraphy and letter sculptures.
You can have a name, a date, initials or slogan made into an eye-catching piece of art.
Like a beautiful sentence, you can sculpture it for the home, it's something for your garden, it's something you can put on all kind of products.
I headed to Maud Beckart's Letters and Steen workshop.
And I carve in the traditional way, that's actually the way the Romans did, with a chisel and a hammer.
Maud fell into this craft career by chance.
I went to a normal high school and planned to go to university, but really didn't know what to do at university. A friend of my dad was a letter carver, and I wanted to do like a gap year. And I wanted to do something with my hands before I went to study and do something with my head. I chose letter carving and I went into his workshop for a year. I liked the sound of the chisels, the tools. I liked the smell in the workshop. I really felt good there. The teacher of art I had in high school fell in love with one of the most famous calligraphers. And he taught me in the art of calligraphy.
Now, Bruges is a city known for chocolate. I found one street with 6 shops virtually next to each other, with their windows full of beautiful displays of truffles, bars, and even chocolate sculptures. Again, it's an area where locals seem to be really creative. I headed to the Chocolate Line. This city centre chocolate factory and shop has been recognised by the prestigious Michelin Guide. Its owner, Dominique Possoon, is a television chef who's worked with Heston Blumenthal. His colleague Hertz showed me around the chocolate factory, which is on full display to shoppers.
The smell now, it's of a really high cocoa content dark chocolate bar. That's what this place smells like. It's really rich. You just inhale it and it's lovely. But you can see the process. You can see all of these shiny silver buckets with different cocoa beans in them. And you can see the chocolate whirring around in that big drum. I guess some people just want to come and put their hands in that. Would that taste good?
It's 100% cocoa. It's a very, very bitter, strong taste. And also the aftertaste, sometimes very dry, of 100% cacao.
The shop's counter is filled with hundreds of chocolates. Some of the flavours sound odd, but trust me, I've tried them and they really work.
He wants to do experience with it, and so he made also chocolate like with sun-dried tomato or with other veggie stuff, like with onion, with mushrooms. He made one chocolate with saffron curry.
And I got to pick.
We have a chocolate called Bangkok. It's with cocoa milk and a lemongrass. It's amazing.
The chocolates were delicious. In fact, there were so many taste sensations. It takes you a few minutes to eat each one. All over the city, you'll find cafes offering mussels and the Belgian favourite of chips with mayonnaise. Bruges is so proud of that dish, there's even a chip museum. It's actually quite interesting. It covers the whole potato story from the first arriving from South America to the Irish potato famine. There's kitsch chip posters and potato pop art and a period 1960s mini chip shop inside. A display suggests that French fries are actually Belgian. They were misnamed because Americans were confused by French-speaking Belgian soldiers in the First World War. Seems plausible. There's lots of good food choices in Bruges other than chips.
There's over 400 restaurants here in Bruges, so I can go to a different one each day if I would earn enough money, that is.
Jos de Roo is chef at his cafe, Brooks and Brunch, which doubles up as a second-hand bookshop. He recommends staying away from the tourist traps.
You have the train station and the bus station on one side of town. Most tourists get dropped off there, sort of wander over to the market square, eat too expensively, go, ooh, it's 3 o'clock, we have to get back, and sort of wander back the same way. But if you go to the other side of town, where the windmills are, it's a lot quieter, less chocolate stores, less beer stores, less t-shirt stores, less tourists, but more authenticity.
Now, of course, Belgium is famous for its beer. A great place to sample the best brews on offer is Bruges Beer Museum. Just be careful, Belgian beer can be rather strong. It's not uncommon to get 8 or 9% beers. The beer museum's just behind the market square. They'll educate you about the different brews, including Trappist beers.
They have to be made inside of the monastery by the monks, with water a source coming from inside the premises of the monastery and everything like that. The money that is gained by the Trappist beers has to be inverted into good causes. So it's very limited always. They don't brew a lot of liters every year. And here you see, of course, yeah, the six Belgian ones.
Lars Pillen is the manager. He showed me around the high-tech museum. You're given a tablet which you can use to read QR codes, like barcodes, on exhibits.
The rest of the museum is based on augmented reality. Just scan everything. All the hearing items are spoken by native speakers.
Beer or similar beverage.
You'll enter a room where all of the wall space is taken by beer bottles from all over the world.
Wow. Here we have over 3,000 beer bottles, full beer bottles, hanging on the wall.
It looks like my recycling room when I was a student.
Beer-wise, one of the biggest landmarks there is. So,
do you get people from different places trying to find their local beer?
Yes, we do.
Have you got British ones here?
There are some British ones involved here. I don't exactly know where they are because, as you understand, I don't know them all by heart.
Yeah, of course.
At the end of your self-guided tour, you can relax in the light, airy and spacious bar, with large bench tables and huge windows, offering commanding views over the marketplace. They have a massive selection of Belgian and international beers. You can find out more at brugesbeermuseum.com.
Or they can come straight to the bar and have a tasting here. So I suggest we do the same.
Cool, lovely. Yes, definitely.
Good.
That sounds good.
Bruges offers a perfect weekend break destination from Britain. The journey on the Eurostar and the local train from Brussels takes under 4 hours. Or fly to Brussels. It takes an hour from the UK and then get the train for another 60-minute journey to Bruges. Make sure you've got a baggage allowance. It's a year-round great destination. And once you've seen the sights, you'll probably want to bring home gifts, which are handmade in Bruges.
The Great Destinations Radio Show.